Today's cool fact of the day is that Americans eat 100 pounds of chocolate or more per second. And the reason this is the cool fact of the day for today on Bulletproof Radio is that we're going to be talking a lot about memory. And you might have seen on Google or somewhere that if you Google chocolate and brain, you'll find all kinds of interesting results about what chocolate does, much like coffee, for human performance. Today's guest on the show is Mattias Ribbing. Mattias is the leading brain trainer in Sweden. He's an educator, a public speaker, but he's also a three-time Swedish memory champion, and he's ranked number 75 in the world and has actually been awarded the title of Grand Master of Memory, which only 122 people have ever done. He achieved all this in the past basically 6 years because he only started hacking his memory in 2008. And when we're talking about hacking memory, it's not little things like remembering the names of people you met. It's memorizing 1,000 random digits in an hour. It's memorizing the order of 10 decks of cards in an hour, or one deck of cards in under 2 minutes. And that's pretty amazing. These skills are fully trained, not things that he was born with. Mattias, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's a pleasure.
Now, we're talking today, you're in Sweden, right?
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. And I'm here in Victoria, BC, so we're almost as far north as each other. And it's funny, I got married in Stockholm, which is where you are.
Wonderful.
Now, I want to understand something. You say that memory is a sport, or memory championships or memory training is a sport. Do people get mad when people say that's a sport? Because what's not a sport? You know, you didn't have to take a hit. You didn't have to lift anything heavy. You just had to like look at a sheet of paper for a while and then play it back.
Yeah, that's the reason that us and chess, we can't get into the official council of sports that are because we don't move enough. But hell yeah, this is a sport. But it's a funny one. But it's been around for like 23 years now. There are world championships and all kinds of international tournaments. And yeah, we meet basically for a weekend, and there's a decathlon with 10 different events. With 10 different kinds of informations that we have to take in as much information as possible and then be able to recite it exactly as it was. So it's, for example, as you said, numbers and decks of cards, but also we have words, images, names, faces, sounds, different things. So you should be able to use your brain for any kind of information that you might encounter during a day. And we do these crazy things that, for example, as you said, with the numbers, that's one of the marathon events. We have both speed events and marathon events. The marathons, we get like a sheet of paper, just random digits to stare at for an hour. After that, we get a blank sheet of paper and a pen, and then have to write down exact the order of as many as we can remember. And if you only have small mistakes, you get a lot of stuff deducted. So after that time, as you said, I do something like in a paper of this. Now you maybe be able to see it, but this is 1,000 digits correct all after each other. And that's the official what you need to do to become a grandmaster in one of the events.
So if you're listening from your car or something, not watching on iTunes or on YouTube, you would have seen a whole sheet full of basically small numbers, maybe spaced a quarter inch apart. So you just stare at that thing and you memorize it, and then you write down all the numbers from memory again.
So this is the sports, and it's a fun thing to do, but a bit silly in a way, but it's good to prove to people that this can all be done with brain training. It's a super quantifiable way of brain training that you can test, and you can see that before I was only able to assess anyone. I was not a genius in any way, average in school and so on. And from maybe you will be able to remember 10 digits or so, and then some brain training in between, you can do 1,000. So that's really to show the quantifiable way of increasing your learning in a dramatic way. But this is just competitions. What's really interesting is how to use this in daily life. And this is why I started to train my brain and to train my memory to be able to, because I love learning. I love learning all kinds of stuff. And I wanted, I worked as a teacher also. And I love the aspect of teaching people. And I saw that this can be increased in a dramatic way, both teaching other people to make them learn quicker and also, of course, for yourself with some basic training principles. And this is what I started in 2008. And that's now a few years ago, but it only took me a few months to gain my first Swedish record and then becoming a champ. It's like you learn to drive a car. It takes a few months. Then you have this ability with you for the rest of your life. And you use it in daily life when you read interesting books or you sit at lectures or whatever you do, or at work where you need to store, take in lots of new information. So then this skill can increase and become even better over the years, just like hopefully you're driving or so. So this is the interesting thing, that to find a working strategy that you can have for learning any kind of information. And this is what I trained, and this is what anyone can train. And the basics of this, of it is to teach your brain how to think in images, to train your visualization skills. Because what you do then in the brain, by visualizing images, you get like a shortcut to the long-term memory. So by thinking in images, so then the brain can take in a lot of information quick. So this is the interesting, when you compare our five senses, our sight, I see, sense is the most important to the brain. And this is true for everyone. You can actually see that three of each neurons, all the neurons that work with one of our senses, actually 3/4 of them all work with our sight. And so this is the important, if you compare it by learning through sound, for example, if I want to learn something by saying it out loud, time after time, like a telephone number or anything, you just repeat like a parrot, then the brain can only take in a small amount. And that is in the characteristic of our sense. It's not very different for different people. There are this bullshit stuff that everyone learns different. And in a way, we have different likes and dislikes, but our brains are pretty similar in basic structure. So we who compete in memory and in learning, we all know that it's the same for all of us, that we have to see images, train our brain to visualize better. Then we can take in much more information fast.
So now help me understand this. I've clearly read a few books on memory, and I'm interested in this. I'm actually working on some more intuition creativity, but also memory training software. And how does this work? Like walk someone who's sitting in their car right now who's saying, I'd like to be able to memorize just 100 numbers, to heck with 1,000. How do you visualize a number? You look at it, it looks like number one. Like what's the trick?
Yeah. Let's pause with the numbers. That's the most difficult. Let's All right. take something much more easier. Let's take every time that you read something, let's say that you read the newspaper. That's a perfect opportunity when you're reading to do some brain training at the same time.
Right.
Then it doesn't cost any extra time. So what you do at the same time when you try to read something is at the same time that you read, what you should do is to try to see the contents as a movie.
The contents of what you're reading. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So if you read about, let's say, in a newspaper article about a robbery, there's a robber fleeing, coming out from a bank, fleeing down the pavement. He has a black hat, he has a green jacket, yellow pants. He's running down, chased by two cops with guns drawn. Can you see this in a way?
Right.
And what you do to really train your visualization skills is to hold that image for a little bit. Try to make it bigger. Try to see this the robber with this green jacket and yellow pants. Just to see the pavement, bit more detail and so on, and make it big. Then when because we all, there's actually very interesting research published in Cognitive Science that has proved that everyone think in images, even if we don't believe we do. Even the people who say I'm not visual, they do it, because they tested this with measuring eye movements. And when people see, and you can see the people that they see images because their eye movements correspond to how they speak. So, and if you think of it, maybe if you have read a novel in a way and then seen the same story as a movie, maybe then you're always disappointed because you have already formed your own images of right. this novel. And that's the thing, that we all have seen this these images, but only quick and by chance. And it's through these images that we have all seen that we can follow the a full story and remember stuff around and so on, because we create these inner images. But now we change from these images popping up automatically to now to do them consciously. That's the thing, to train this memory and visualization skills. So if you're, for example, if you just take something simple, if you want to become better at visualizations, just let's say, for example, visualize a dog. And if you decide for a certain specific type of dog, the first thing that comes to mind, you should always use the first thing that comes to your mind and see a dog in front of you. Try to make that image bigger. See it. It becomes like a meditation. It's a super good visual meditation to see this dog and to see it as clear as possible and to see it in three dimensions. That's also a very important aspect of becoming better at visualization, to visualize in 3D. Because there's also great research that has shown which images that stays the longest in the brain. And that is images who have this clear shapes, rounded sharp edges or rounded parts. So this 3D images, so trying to see that is very important. So, and it, when you want to learn this in the beginning, it's a bit tricky. You have to almost force your, can use your hand almost as, can I see something between my hands, a dog, for example, like this. But each time that you do it, the brain becomes more and more used to it and it starts to get automatic. Okay, that's the thing, that you can encode any kind of information. Now we started with this newspaper article. That's something very clear, but you go step and step through this and learn to translate all kinds of information into images. Even you can do crazy math formulas, and as we showed, you can do it with numbers also. And but always to try to encounter, to do this. Also, when you sit, you listen to someone speak, can you try to see what images that pop up to your mind and hold them there and try to see it in front of you? Then your brain will work almost like a magnet, sucking information into it, and you will remember so much. So and that's interesting, because these images, they work like clues for your brain. There are clues that make you, that you can remember and find your way to encode back to what was being said. So if after you've read this newspaper article and you have these small mental movies, small YouTube movies in the brain, then you retell the whole thing by these clues. And what you will notice is that you will remember far more that is in the article than you have just, even if it's not all in the movie, but the movie, like, it gathers the information like a magnet. It sucks lots of stuff to it. So, and you can quickly get things into your long-term memory.
Interesting. So it's all about the quality and the type of the visualization, and you've trained yourself to do that sort of by default. Now, what about things like basic intelligence? I mean, do you talk about what your IQ is?
I have actually no idea. I haven't tested it. And in a bit for a reason also, that this has nothing to do with it. Yeah. That step by step, I haven't encountered now for the 5 years I've been working with this and writing 2 books and being out a lot in both in schools and with at companies to train different people. I haven't encountered a single person who is too stupid or so, because it's basically what I did notice, however, that it's so much faster for a 7th grade person to learn this than for an executive or a researcher or some high profile company people. So that's actually amazing. One of my books in Swedish though, but it's for how to use this kind of thinking in school and to get this thinking in images to become automatic from the early start, so you have this through the rest of your life, basically. This is the new step within memory and memory training, because there are all these old techniques that people talk about, creating stories and so on, but that's like, that is too tough for the brain, and seeing violent and sexy things, that's too much strength from the brain needed for that, so you become exhausted. You can't use that every day, but the thing is to have it become automatic, like we did, for example. We've all learned to write to store information on paper through learning an alphabet, using the pen, so now we don't need to think how we do it. So what I've learned, and that anyone can learn, is how to write directly into the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Then you need a new alphabet, which is an alphabet that consists of pictures, and a new grammar to form new words, how to connect these images together in a way that you can always find yourself back to them and remember what you would. And then it's the using your mental pen, which is your visualization skills. So that becomes, so I never need to think about how to store the information. It just happens when I decide it.
So having a built-in new skill on demand is something a lot of people would be interested in having, me included. What kind of commitment does it take to learn this? Like, how much time, how much effort, how hard is it? How long do you need to do this before it really becomes automatic?
For me, it took about 4 months of training, 2 hours a day, 4 days a week.
So that's a substantial commitment.
Yeah, but look at how much time we do in a lot of stuff. People who learn to, it's like, 2 hours a day, 4 days a week for 4 months, then you have it. Like you get your driver's license, and then you have it for the rest of your life.
It's like a one-time upgrade, and once you've got it, you've got it. And there's great value to that. I'm interested in doing that, although honestly, for me, finding 2 hours a day for 4 months right now is probably, you need to find time in life when you're willing, and it's a good time to do that. Like, for instance, you have a new baby, right?
Yeah.
So would you recommend?
I'm happy to have that behind me. But the thing, what I did it through an online training, which is super, where you have 60 lessons where you go through all kinds of information, how you do that and how you train it to become an automatic skill that you can use for anything. This kind of online training, I do it myself in Sweden, run it under, it's called Mind Academy there for Swedish people. For English people, you can find that pmemory.com. So it's just easy, just start to train, doing each lesson and then for 60 lessons, then you're done and then you have this skill. So that's a good recommendation to really get it done. But you can, the key is also that even if you don't have the time, to be smart, to use, even when you read something, try to visualize it in front of you. Make the images bigger and try to see things in 3D ahead of you. For example, people who learn, you can make anything. You can in 3D. For example, people who learn new languages when you learn new signs, for example, it's almost magic what happens when you draw these signs, like a hiragana sign or a Japanese or Chinese. When you draw it out and it becomes 3D, and the brain then starts to, when these visual connections, that goes into much quicker into the long-term memory directly, and you can have control over it. And this is basically it, that this is a controlled way to use your memory, so actually you know what you know, and you know what you have don't know also. So a little funny thing is that, so I've learned this, so I can decide whatever I want to remember. Even if it's a complex thing, I know how much time it will take, but I quickly can learn it and be sure that I know it. But the funny thing is that I can also decide for how long I want to remember this. If I want to remember it for a few days, a week, a month, 6 months, a year, or for the rest of my life, this I can decide.
And how do you make that programmable? That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, because I know what I do, that when I have make these visual connections, I connect, basically what I do is always connect two images at the same time together. So I train my brain to two images at the same time, so that's become more or less automatic. Those kinds of connections in the brain, I know they will be with me for about 5 hours. That's for how long. And after 5 hours, I might start to forget some of those. So if it's a competition event, then it's fine. After 5 hours, I can forget it. But if it's something important that I've learned, then I know that I have to strengthen these visual connections before 5 hours. So what I do is that I then mentally just look through the images I have created. It's very fast, and it's like you browse images on a smartphone, image after image, very, very quickly, and you do it mentally. If I do this before the 5 hours has passed, then I know that the things will be with me for the whole next day, basically. And this is approximations, but this is what's true for me where I am right now. Okay. But it's almost it's very close for people. And if I want to have it longer than for the next day, then I know I have the full next day to sometime go through it again quickly. Then I know it will be with me for maybe 3 days.
So you're doing the spaced repetition where we've figured out how much time can elapse if you want to remember something forever, and you're applying that to the memory sport. Okay, that's really cool.
Awesome. And the interesting thing is also that this kind of mental repetition, I never need to look at the original material again. So I don't need to have the papers or listen to whatever it was. So then I can do this at dead times during the day. That if I wait for someone, I go through a couple of images, I brush my teeth, I can go through a couple of images. Then next time I have a short time, then I go through another, continue where I was, go through a couple of images. So I don't give any extra time into this.
Isn't that kind of stressful? Like sometimes that you want to just take a break or just like, you know, play with your baby or something like that, and you're like constantly like cognitively spinning here. It seems to me like that would maybe not be a relaxing practice.
No, definitely not. But it's all controlled. It's all chosen. I choose when I want to do it, and I stop when I need to stop. Just like learning how to write, that just because you can write, you don't go around writing down everything. And this is so quick. So it takes 2 minutes to go through a quarter of memorized stuff. So it's very, very quickly, and then it's done, and then I don't do it anymore.
Okay.
And it's only these first days, because if the next time I do it, for each time you do it, it stays with you longer. So then if I do it after 3 days, then it will stay with me for a week. And if I do it, once during that week, it will stay maybe 2 weeks.
Okay, so you decide if it's important, you spend a little extra time on it. Well, is doping a problem in memory sports?
Not so far that I know of.
Are there rules against it?
No. Oh. There are some kind of ethic rules, though. But this is another very interesting area, and the smart drugs and so on that I'm starting to learn more about, and what works and what doesn't. And my wife is a PhD in medicine. She set up a blind study for me because I got my hands on some SealTap, you know, those fantastic guys.
Yeah, we carry it in the Bulletproof store, right?
Yeah. So what I did, we did a blind test where I, for 10 days, each morning, I had, for 5 days, I had placebo, for 5 days, I had SealTap, and I didn't know when. And I did the same routine, ate the same thing, had my Bulletproof coffee every day, of course. That's how I always start my day now. So, but I did, and at the same time, I did the official rules of the event speed cards, where you look through a deck of card once, time, and you time it for how long it takes, and then you try. So I did 2 trials each day for 10 days. And I had no idea if I was on SealTap or not, but I saw which day worked the best. And then when we put because I never told my wife, she knows what I was taking, but I didn't tell her about the memorization results, just wrote everything down. And then we checked. And out of these 20 trials that I did in these 10 days, my 4 fastest ones were all on SealTap. And the failed trials, you know, the rules in memory sports are super strict. Even if you have a single mistake, it's considered a failed trial. So I did 8 failed trials, and only 2 of those were on SealTap.
Wow.
6 of them was on placebo.
So that was substantial. Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's impressive. I'm a fan of SealTap for sure. And we've had Abelard on the show, the guy who invented this stuff.
Yeah.
And if you're listening to this, it's CILTEP. And if you've never heard of this, it's an extract of artichoke combined with an Ayurvedic herb called forskolin. And when you combine these things, they basically can long-term potentiate the cells in your brain, so they work better. So I don't use it every day, but I do definitely use it for cognitive boosts. Are you going to be taking it every day now?
No, I don't want to do – I tried not to do two things, so many things each day, except maybe bulletproof coffee though. But to, I think it's important to cycle things, not to
– I cycle things too except bulletproof coffee just because it's obvious when I cycle that I don't – yeah. I'm just not the same.
I can tell you the story. Actually, when I start after my first year of memory competitions, I noticed during these days that we compete, you know, there are so tough days on the competition. You know, memory sports is the most tough thing you can do for your concentration.
Yeah.
Because you have to have each. Well, there are some disciplines where each millisecond is important because a single other thought. That makes you lose a point, basically. You can so it's very like that. And I noticed we have very long days from early in the morning to late in the evening. And I noticed on my first year that I was getting incredibly tired and I was always doing worse in the afternoon. And I saw I'm not living up to my standards here. Yeah. So what I then did, that I switched and I found out about what it is about a low-carb, high-fat diet.
Yeah.
And this was a total game changer for me in this. Because I was not in, I heard about this diet, you lose weight and so on. I was not very interested. But I had already started doing some quantifiable tests when I quit. Because then I was doing all kinds of energy drinks and so on. Then, yeah. But even if when I was stoked on these energy drinks, that was horrible for the concentration and focus. It's worse. So even when I forced myself to quit those massive headaches, tired, I scored better.
Wow.
That. So, but then the switching to the low-fat, low-carb, high-fat diet really changes these. So I immediately had strict before 3 weeks before each competition. I was super strict on this, and what I noticed was that I could go on these days like I don't know what, but the full day I was not even tired in the evening. And the important thing for me was that I didn't have these dips.
Yeah, the cognitive endurance—you just—you get the cognitive endurance because you have the ketones. It's like burning a giant piece of coal instead of like a bunch of like pieces of grass that just like that's what sugar does. Like it just puff and it's gone.
Right? Definitely, and all sugar and stuff that all messes with your hunger sensations and so on. Because if you really want to focus, you can't be hungry. So the people who notice that, most people know that you don't have a big bowl of pasta if you want to perform in memory sports in the afternoon. So then they try to eat a small salad or so, but then they get super hungry. So then they can't perform on that either. But with a good, with a low carb, high fat diet, you're more in control of your hunger feelings and you're not a slave during this. You can go on for a long time, even if you need to and you don't have food because the brain have the fuel it needs anyway. So that it's a total myth, this thing that the brain needs, you need to eat sugar or carbs for the brain to work. That's like someone who tries to stop smoking cigarettes and say, oh, not smoking cigarettes gives me terrible headaches or whatever.
When you go
it's a change.
When you go super strict for 3 or 4 weeks, don't you find that your sleep quality declines after a while?
Well, super strict is I do low carb, high fat. It's not no carb, high fat.
There you go. And this is important for people listening.
Yeah.
On the bulletproof diet, a lot of people, they get into it like, oh, I just have like some green vegetables and meat and I feel amazing. I'm like, yeah, that's good for a couple weeks. But when I did this for 3 months straight, I actually got new food allergies because at a certain point, you need some carbs to make polysaccharides, which line your cells. They make mucus, they make tears. And I'd gotten below that threshold. So there's some minimum effective carbs. And a few people who've been on the show can have zero carbs for the rest of their life and they seem to be fine, but they're a small minority from what my experience with clients and myself. So you're the same way. How many carbs do you eat every day?
No, I basically get my carbs from vegetables above ground and so on. So I don't need so much, but I do cycle it sometimes, some with some rice or some something in the evening. Have some. You talked about chocolate. I love the Lindt 90% chocolate.
Yeah.
It's my the very best brand that we can get over here at least.
That's good stuff.
So, but I do, and I'm not always that. It depends on what I have to do and how the coming week is. So I'm not doing the same, eating the same thing each day, but. And my wife is also very, she's a big fan of Terry Wall's protocol. So we eat tons of vegetables and so on. So we.
If you eat tons of veggies and a high fat diet and a moderate amount of high quality protein, and every now and then you have enough carbs to go out of ketosis, that's going to get you there. And you know, Terry and I are friends. We see things very much eye to eye. I'm a fan of her protocols. You know, she uses actually brain octane oil and the glutathione. So I would endorse her writing for sure. So it's funny that you've noticed that. Another thing, in fact, we first met in person when you were out here on Vancouver Island.
Yeah.
Right. And you were out here to do the 40 years of Zen neurofeedback thing. And it's interesting, during that kind of training, which for me, not having done a memory competition, the most mentally taxing thing that I know is to sit in a neurofeedback chamber for hours and hours, focusing all of my energy on making my brain do what a Zen master would do. So like you said, one little slip up, the sounds get quieter, your score goes down. So it's like laser focus, and it's like running a marathon with your brain.
Yeah.
So for me to do that without, in this case, you don't even use coffee during that time, which is painful, but coffee can suppress very high alpha waves, which isn't a problem in daily life. But if you're trying to do Zen mastery work in a chamber, it is. Even then, like the replacement for bulletproof coffee is brain octane, butter, and vanilla. Because without the fats, I just don't know how to bring it the way you can when you're on that high fat thing. Did you notice a difference when you were doing the neurofeedback training 40 years of Zen? Does that kind of intent focus feel like a memory competition, or is it a different thing? Because I only know one, not the other.
It's a different thing in one way, because if you do really super focused visualization of certain shapes and so on, that brings the beta waves.
Of course.
But it's all about control. It was a fantastic week, super intense. But it's very complementary to what I do in my kind of memory training, that's a conscious thing that you want to become an automatic skill. Here it was finding this, that's my impression of the being in the, finding the highest alpha and remaining there, to find this relaxed focus where the place where all the ideas come to you, basically. When you're just there, so you understand things, you see connections, and new ideas pop up and so on. And to learn to be there consciously and to use that state for working on yourself or on ideas or basic stuff. So yeah, that was a really phenomenal week. I'm looking forward to it. I would like to do it even more if I had the chance.
Interesting. Thanks for explaining the difference there. One of the things that you learn when you start to raise the alpha in your brain is that when you open your eyes or when you think about 3D shapes, that it lowers alpha. So what I don't know, though, is whether there's some line between alpha and beta, which is what you bring on when you do this visualization. Beta is not a good or a bad thing. Excess beta with a lack of alpha is bad, but it's, you know, even cortisol, no cortisol, you die, too much cortisol, you die. There's always somewhere in the middle where you want to be. So you may be one of the most experienced people on earth in terms of switching between a functional beta state, not a fight or flight beta state, but I'm using my brain for this, and an alpha state where I'm not using my brain for that. How does it feel when you switch from one state to the other?
It's the sensation of control is amazing.
Okay.
That you can decide that this the experience of sitting in the chamber with the tones, and you can be able to have them go up when you want to, basically. It's like, and afterward this rings on, so it's like, okay, should I put on my tones now? Yeah, that would be a good idea. I don't have the tones, but I've done this so much in that week. So what do I need right now? Now I need focused writing. Then it's that kind of focus. So it's like taming this focus to go into to different modes, basically. And to what is important there was shown in that training, that it's because in your current state of mind at a certain time, that state is filled with so much emotions and your past and stuff. So basically, you also, it's not to be able to control and go and make the tones higher or lower when you need to. You also have to be more in control with your emotions and know about them. And so this is also a very important thing when it comes to brain training, and when it comes for my memory training also, to switch on my super focus during competitions that I can't be feel I can't couldn't have an argue with my wife before going to competition. That would be a disaster. And I have to work long term with that. And I've done a lot of meditation, but to do it with neurofeedback training, there to get the constant 50 times per second feedback when you're doing the meditation correct is just phenomenal.
So you do meditate as part of your mental training. Is there a kind of meditation that you focus on that helps you best with being a memory champion?
No, I'm very open. I've done so many different kinds. Okay. I started actually my whole inner journey of mental training. I started with transcendental meditation back in the days, and that totally blew my mind up, and I saw that there are huge possibilities in life that we are not aware of, that we're not taught about in school. But from there on, I discovered this, the quantifiable ways of training your brain and how this interacts with diet and food. So food is the number one smart drug there is. It's amazing that it's not in the mainstream how much our food decides our how it applies to our way of focus.
Yeah.
So why is this not talked about in school?
When the Bulletproof Diet book comes out December 2nd, there's actually a couple chapters on food in focus because it's such a big thing. And the mechanisms, I've mapped that out as best I can with studies and science and anecdotes. Because like you said, if they would just tell you that, every ninth grader I know wants to pay attention. And they're just as frustrated as we are when their brains are like bouncing all over the place. And then we're adults and we're trying to work and you're in a meeting and you start thinking about whatever the heck it is you think about. That is tied to what you ate. And it's just non-obvious, but it is. So you've got that because you've developed this laser focus so that you can just focus and remember things. So you'll notice when the laser breaks up and then you correlate that to what you ate. What's the food that's most kryptonite for you? Like the thing that just doesn't work?
And that's the interesting. When I first started with this, it was just basic low carb, high fat. But then getting into it more and more, and that's I love your work to really learn more of the details. That's been a big thing for me now. Has been to quit gluten totally.
Yeah, that stuff is rots your brain.
Yeah, and even I noticed because when I in between competition and so on, I could have a piece of bread, but that's not worth it. You can have some other stuff, then that's okay, but just in gluten, so that's been a big thing to me. And then to really explore Bulletproof Coffee, now I don't compete anymore, but Bulletproof Coffee has taken my daily performance to a whole new level. So that was... Since last year, I started doing a daily Bulletproof Coffee in the morning, and it's just transformed my day even more. So after this, now I'm checking even more stuff like for example, Siltepiz also but you can't do the top things in the pyramid first. You need if you don't care about your food, it's everything else is just. A waste of time, basically.
You can take a cow pie that's American for, you know, cow manure, and you can put chocolate frosting on it, which would be Bulletproof Coffee or Siltepiz. It's still a lump of crap. You've got to fill in the right foods and get your biology working, and then you can really do it. Or I don't know if this is popular in Sweden, but you ever see like a $500 car that's falling apart with $5,000 wheels on it?
Yeah.
Honestly, upgrade the car before you upgrade the wheels, and Siltep or Bulletproof Coffee or these advanced training techniques, all of those require a foundation. So thank you for saying that, Matthias. Yeah. It's so important, and it makes me sad when people eat, you know, French fries, pizza, and beer, and like, yeah, I'm going to go train my brain. Like, you might get some benefits, but like, you're not getting it. Like, screw the brain training. Just eat something that's good for you.
Definitely, and things will start to happen. And to add to that whole scheme, I would say also to care about also, you need to pay attention to both the software of your machine and to the hardware. Yeah. So with the food and all this hardware, it's super important. What I do with the memory training is like getting the best software program for the brain. And these are colored. You can't have a high speed working software if you have crappy hardware. And vice versa in a way. So they are both important. And to throw a bit of heart in there, you also need to work on your emotions and relationships and all that kind of gooey stuff.
The super geeky part of me, you know, being a cloud computing guy and computer innovator, there's hardware, which you got to get your cells working and your hormones, like eat good stuff. And there's like a layer of firmware, which a lot of people don't even know what that is, but these are like the chips that have software on them that are in your computer. So when you turn it on, it knows how to load the actual software. And that firmware layer is like your sympathetic nervous system, your fight or flight response, that gooey stuff you just mentioned. Yeah. If that stuff isn't working very well, it doesn't matter what you're trying to do with your thoughts, because your firmware that's sitting between the hardware and your thinking, it gets in the way. And those, the lack of focus from being hungry, well, that's a firmware function. The firmware's like, I'm freaking out here. I didn't get the bagel I wanted. So then your software gets a glitch. So for me, I had to start with the body. And like I've been transformed, and then I had to deal with the emotions, and all of a sudden then I could do things like pay attention. And I could use the attention for anything, whether it's memory training kind of stuff, which admittedly I haven't done a lot of your kind of memory training at all. I've read about it. Or like the 40 Years of Zen, or anything like writing a book, or just like being fully present. I don't know that you can achieve the heights of memory mastery that you have if you have like all sorts of emotional stuff stirring. So did you use TM to get rid of your, not get rid of, but at least to tame the emotional, spiritual stuff that sits between your thinking and your body?
Not in particular. TM was much earlier, but okay. Lots of work. Actually, I worked a lot of actionable meditation in action, and almost trying to distress myself as much. And what I used for that was I actually did a lot of something called Gurdjieff movements. And Gurdjieff was one of these spiritual, Western spiritual teachers, which in a very practical way wanted to challenge your focus. So there you basically do different things with different parts of the body mm-hmm. at the same time. One thing with the arms, another thing in another thing with the so you do too much, and then you learn to be focused there when it's the most hard, and that's when all the emotional stuff come up also that you have to do something with. I took that also into the memory training I did in this program. I did the online course. There's this phase where you use a computer software where you have learned to do the basic stuff, so you can do numbers, for example. Then this computer program shows you each 2 seconds or so, shows you a new number, and you try to memorize it that you have learned. You have trained this for a while. But so in the beginning, you need total quietness, basically. So I started like that, but after a while, I could get it. Then to make it harder, I put on the radio with music. And then I, I tried to memorize the same thing. And that was super tough on the focus because the focus goes to the music and then you have to pull it back to the numbers.
What's the worst kind of music for focus?
I actually did both music I love and both music I hate and tried different styles. It was basically not so much different. It was all difficult. But then I trained. I didn't give up. So after a while, I could keep the focus. But then I took it to the next level. So then I turned on the TV or radio with talk radio, basically.
That's
with people, with voices talking. And I tried to find programs that I thought were really interesting. So interesting stuff with people talking about, but all the time focus on the numbers, the training. And then again, results dropped terribly because I wanted to listen to this stuff. But I continued pulling my focus back to the numbers, and after a while I couldn't do the focus even there. So that has been a very solid part of it, being able to have super focus. So you can see that in memory competitions, most people sit with a big, they have both earplugs and big this building head cups. But I never use any of that stuff because I'm prepared. If people are making noises, I can put on my focus because I've trained it like that. I don't need to make everything quiet around me because I want to use my focus and memory skills anytime in any situation.
I've got to say, if people aren't impressed by that, this is no different than someone who's practiced that incredible focus to, you know, power lift or to become an advanced martial artist. You're just training focus, which is harder to see, but those skills do not come easily. Like, they come with a lot of work. And your comment about it causing especially the Gurdjieff movement exercises, causing just frustration. I did something a while back called Five Rhythms Dancing or Movement, and it was something that made me feel like an absolute complete failure. And that's what it's designed to do. And you stand in a circle, and there's someone in the middle banging a drum, and there's someone else playing this crazy Brazilian instrument that's stringed. It sounds cool. I don't remember what its name is. And then there's a dance, and they show you the dance, and you start doing the dance. And then they change the music, and they change the dance constantly. And it's overwhelming because you're trying to put your feet in the right place, you know, get it right. And then your nervous system, basically that firmware layer, gets in there and goes, you know, you're dumb. Everyone else is doing it. You're not doing it right. And everyone else's mind has the same thing going on, but you don't know it. So you spend like 6 hours feeling like the world's dumbest person. When you're done, you're like ready to cry. Mm. And the whole point of it is to make you face those feelings so that they'll shut the heck up. And
exactly.
And so what you did is you trained that early on, and then you went in later, and then you said, all right, I'm going to train while I'm doing my skill with all these crazy distractions. That requires a lot of willpower and focus. Man, kudos. That is not a simple practice that you developed there.
It's interesting what you can do. And I didn't even tell you the last step of that ladder.
Oh, what is it?
Because when I had the noises from TV and so on, with people talking, and then random numbers, two-digit numbers coming randomly, the last step was that I start at the same time, I counted loudly 99, 98, 96, 97, at the same time memorizing completely other random numbers.
That's impressive. Wow.
But this actually, because this happens in the different senses, that it almost gets easily because the hearing sense, I put that automatically beyond 99, 98. So the numbers that come on, it's only visualization. And that is the key to remembering. So I don't say the numbers, they're only, because my other, the speaking is busy with other stuff. So I can only focus on that. So that is, and that, by the way, I had to upgrade that system also with my, I said I had an image for each two-digit numbers. That made me too slow, and I had difficulty of reaching my grandmaster title with the numbers. So I had to upgrade it. So now I have a different image for each three-digit number.
So you have 1,000 images
store. Images just for numbers, which makes that I need less images, but I would get
so
more numbers like that.
What image is associated with 999?
That's a it's like a tie in a turquoise tie.
A turquoise tie. All right.
This kind of bow tie.
A bow tie. Got it.
That's 999. That's the interesting thing, that language is limited. There are only so many words, but there are endless amounts of images. If you say elephant, I can easily have 100 images for an elephant. I can have a pink elephant in plastic. I can have elephant that is sitting down, it's made of chocolate, or a half-cut elephant in iron. All those are elephants, and so you can have basically some of those images I have. So I have to think, how do I describe these images?
Because it's a picture, not actually. It's not just the concept of a bow tie. It's a picture of a specific bow tie in a specific color and a specific knot, kind of thing.
Exactly, right. It's in a specific shape.
Awesome. Well, you have a fascinating brain, Matthias, and we're up against the end of the show, and there's a question that I'm sure you're expecting me to ask because you've heard the show before, and I'm hoping you haven't prepared ahead of time for it. If you have, you remember your answers. So the question is, what are the top three pieces of advice you'd have for people who want to perform better at whatever it is they're here to do? I don't mean just memory tips. I mean, if you want to kick more ass at being human, what are the tricks?
Yeah, we have talked about so much, but I want again to say to find a way to work on your emotions, to work on your upgrading your relationships, not to sit by yourself in a cell or try to upgrade yourself with different supplements or training mechanism, but to upgrade your relationships, to upgrade with the opposite sex, with the experience of sex, the relationships with your parents, all these things you really have to work, and that can really clear away stuff so you can take your mental focus or whatever you want to do into whole new levels. But you can't skip those things. But for some people, it's too much. Nah, I want to do these fun little chemicals. But you won't get anywhere if you don't deal with your emotional issues. And I know someone said this a very good thing. I thought, if you have parents, you have issues. So get started working on your relationships to other people. That would be one thing.
Great.
And this is more of a summary then. But then that we have, so to speak, for the heart, then for the mind, to train yourself to become a visual thinker. Because everyone can do it. It's just a matter of getting into that new habit. You can take in information and use it and understand things much quicker. And it also becomes a very creative thing that we haven't talked about, but never mind. For the mind and then for the body, stay off the grains, sugar, eat plenty of butter with coffee or whatever, and you'll be fine.
Great advice, all of the above. Where can people find out more? And I should say, by the way, we should have mentioned this earlier. You run the Swedish distributor for Bulletproof products in Sweden. So definitely give your URL so people in Sweden can order those things and also learn about your memory training, the other things you do. People in the rest of the world may be interested in things as well, especially to the extent you have them in English. So what are the URLs we should know about?
Yeah, you can always contact me on Twitter, Mattias Ribbing, and I have not an English personal webpage yet, but I will have to get that stuff now, I guess. But I have to tell you about this, that we our new company, I teamed up with a leading paleo educator in Sweden, Jonas Bergqvist, who's expert in the body. Expert in the brain, and my wife, PhD in medicine with outstanding scientific skills. We've started this company, Succeeder, which wants to find the real solutions for optimal physical and mental performance. So your Bulletproof products, we absolutely love them. And we are now, I just heard the other day, we're also allowed to ship them out to the whole of Scandinavia.
So oh, beautiful.
Go to succeeder.se if you want to have it much easier with the customs than if you have to import from the US.
Yeah, we ship to Europe because people ask us to. We don't like doing it either because there's always some immigration guy somewhere border. Yeah. We have no control over it. So no. By all means, I love it that you're willing to do that and that you're helping people get the good stuff over there.
Yeah, and in Swedish, if you're in Swedish, the memory training is mindacademy.se. If you're in English, go to pmemory.com. That's the exact the same way I learned it. You can do the same way. Just take the lessons one by one, so, and there you have the whole thing.
Okay.
So I'd love to hear some thoughts from people. Just contact me on Twitter.
And Mattias, did we confirm, are you going to be coming to the Bulletproof Conference on September 26th through 28th?
Yes,
we've got it locked down. All right, and you'll be speaking.
Definitely, it would be fun. Then I'll do some showing off with the skills also.
Awesome. So if you haven't signed up for that, bulletproofconference.com, I believe, actually by the time this goes live, we'll probably be out of early bird passes, but there may still be a chance. So bulletproofconference.com, you'll get to hang out with me and with Mattias and ask all sorts of questions about SILTEP, memory, bulletproof coffee, and training your emotions and your memory. Mattias, it's always a pleasure. Can't wait to see you again in person.
Me too. Have a great day.
Check out SILTEP Smart Drug. This is an herbal preparation that was recently discovered where a synergistic combination of natural ingredients helps long-term potentiation in the brain. And you can buy SILTEP now on upgradedself.com.